previous program was Max Politics with Ben Max, and that is heard Wednesdays at 5 p.m. here on WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for an encore broadcast, rebroadcast, I should say, an encore rebroadcast of Any Wednesday with David Rothenberg. That's coming up in this hour. The WBAI Evening News will be back tomorrow at 6 p.m. An economic update with Richard Wolf will be back at 6:30 p.m. on Wednesdays next week. Stay tuned for Any Wednesday with David Rothenberg, and that's coming up here on WBAI New York and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
My mood is blue. I couldn't think where else to go. I just dropped by to say hello. Nothing special that I want to say. I just came to pass the time of day. I've told my heart it mustn't show. I just dropped by to say hello. Just how sweet our love was, except now and then. Memories fall just like the rain, and I remember. Don't let me bore you anymore. I'm not quite as lonely as I was before. I didn't want the thing. I just dropped by to say hello. Didn't want a thing.
that was Johnny Hartman, then I'm David Rothenberg. And in fact, the original show was Any Wednesday, Reggie. I came on in the 70s after doing a few years with a show called Both Sides of the Bars. Samori brought me back on Wednesday mornings from 7 to 9. And then I found going to work after being on, getting up at 5, being on the air for 2 hours, it took its toll. And I found that I was getting older and more tired. And then they switched me to Saturdays. So Any Wednesday is a comfortable thought for me. And, you know, because of the pandemic, most of us are at home doing the programs from home, which is an electronic maze for me. But it's comfortable to stay at home, sit in the living room and chatter away, except today that the apartment next door decided to have some repairs. So you might hear, it won't be the beating of my heart, it will be the hammer from the apartment next door. I asked the super if it could be curtailed for an hour, and he very quietly said, no. So if you have any complaints, I'll give you the super's name, his phone number. Well, this is a graceful beginning, isn't it? Maybe that's why people like BAI. It really is community radio. David doesn't know how to get on the air. Reggie has to play some music. And then we chatter about all that. I'm only here to 2, and I've already used up 13 minutes apologizing for my existence. I do want to... What, Reg? What
I'm not saying it. I'm just letting you talk.
So I want to talk about what I did last night. I went I will in a minute. I went to see a new documentary called Attica. Now, it's the same title as other documentaries, but this one by the extraordinary director Stanley Nelson had its American premiere, invitation only, at the Apollo. It had played at the Toronto Film Festival, and I went last night. But first, I want to tell you this. You may be shocked to learn that we're a listener-sponsored radio station, and we don't have commercials. By the way, can you hear the sirens now? That's welcome to my world. The sirens are going by.
The sirens are not that bad.
Huh?
They're not that bad.
The hammering stopped just in time for the sirens.
It's all part of the ambient theater production that you're presenting to the listening audience.
The casual, you know, you prepare, and then life hits you, and you don't know what to say. We have commercials, and the commercials are that we hustle to get premiums to support this listener-sponsored station. And I said this the other day. Somebody said to me, God, you guys are always doing premiums. And I was watching a rerun of Everyone Loves Raymond on TV Land. And they took a break for commercials, 18 commercials. I kept track because I wanted to know if there's a record for this. 18 in a row before they get back. I was wondering if they lost the film for the second act. It just went on and on and on. And you know what I learned? Almost every third commercial, whether it's deodorant or hairspray, the people who testify, it changed their life. And I kept thinking, it takes so little to change people's lives, a hairspray, a deodorant. I've been looking for the magic pill. This is all by way of saying what I have done over the years is to get you to support us, is try to get theater tickets, make them available at very affordable prices, try to find interesting plays, and to invite you to support us. And that's been my plot. And then about 2 weeks ago, I saw that one of my favorite plays of all time, Paul Osborne's Mornings at 7, was to have a revival. This was a play that was originally done in 1939, didn't have a great success. And as old as I am, I did not see that one. I went to a revival in 1981 at the Lyceum. Great cast, wonderful people. And when I remember coming out saying, now this is what theater can do. You can, because I entered a world of people that I didn't particularly know or want to be with, 4 elderly women in a Midwestern town, all sisters, and the layers of years of what happens in families, the resentments, the unfulfilled dreams, all of that comes out, and it almost smothers the love in the families. And I thought, what, this was just perfect theater. And then I read that there's a revival of it coming to the theater at St. Clement's. And I said, I got to get tickets for the BAI people. And then I found out that in this off-Broadway production, they have the most, they have an all-star cast: Judith Ivey, Lindsay Krause, Dan Luria, Tony Roberts, John Rubenstein. And then my guest for this coming Saturday, Patty McCormick. Do you remember her? She was the kid in The Bad Seed, the play and the movie, the youngest actress, I think, ever to get an Oscar nomination. And I thought, Patty McCormick, my goodness. And I can give her age because she can't hide it. Because when she was in The Bad Seed in 1956, everybody said she's 12 years old. So 71, Patty McCormick, 71. But I can't wait to see Mornings at 7 again. And I've hustled up, not hustled up, I very cleverly and very sophisticated, in a very sophisticated manner, arrange for tickets for WBAI listeners. So if you want to see Mornings at 7 next week, and I'll give you the schedule, it's a $50 gift to WBAI for two tickets. Now that's, in this day and age, there are theater performances now that you have to give your firstborn as collateral to get a ticket. $50 for two tickets. You're supporting us, and you're seeing one of the most beautiful plays that I've ever seen, Mornings at 7. So one of the performances start, we have, well, at least what we have, next Wednesday matinee and evening. That's the 20th. And then that's a week from today, Wednesday matinee and evening, Thursday, Friday nights, Saturday matinee and evening, and Sunday matinee. So here's how you do it. You're not going to call some number and get a machine. You email me. This is what is known as Hamish Radio, real community radio. You email me at grothenberg@fortunesociety.org. Give your phone number. And if you want to make my life easier, give your address. And I will call you back in the next day or two, and we'll arrange. We'll get your credit card number, what performance you want, and we'll talk about the world in general if you want. I'll tell you, when I've been doing this since the pandemic, people tell me about the corns that they have, and that the rain is keeping them inside. I've become like Mr. Anthony, solving people's problems. But Mornings at 7 is theater that stirs the soul. And so I invite you to consider seeing it and supporting us. Again, next Wednesday, matinee and evening. And I know there are people of a certain vintage who prefer going into the theater in the daytime, and I identify with that. We have matinees Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday, and the evenings at 7 o'clock, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Saturday, it's for the young and the sophisticated at 8. So email me at drothenberg, that's D as in David, Rothenberg, at fortunesociety, one word, .org, O-R-G. And leave your phone number and you'll get a call from me and we'll talk. Now, if Reggie would play some Lee Wiley, then I'll warm up and tell you about going to the Apollo last night and seeing the premiere of this stunning documentary. Lee Wiley, if you will. There's someone new
change greatly, but I wouldn't say the change is for the good. To give you up, what a fool I'd be. Not a chance, no sorry, on no condition, for my woman's intuition says you're the only one for me.
One of the great song stylists of an earlier period with an Ed Washington, Victor Young song, Lee Wiley. I'm David Rothenberg. It's maybe Wednesday. It is any Wednesday. And so I went to the Apollo last night. They're serious there. Not only do you have to have your vaccination card and an ID, but they asked if I had had a COVID test in the last 24 hours and wasn't on my schedule. They had a truck out front, and if you hadn't been tested, and none of us had, we had the thing stuck up our nose. They're serious about safety and for their customers, and so we went in to see Stanley Nelson's movie. If you're not familiar with his documentaries, he did Freedom Riders and Black Panthers and Tulsa Burning, a documentary about the wonderful jazz pianist Mary Lou Williams. But this was a triumph for Stanley Nelson. I was invited because, for those who are not familiar with me, I was one of the observers that went into Attica Prison Yard in 1971 when the inmates, not trusting the state, understandably, in their negotiations, asked for outside people to come in. And I made the list and went in a state of terror, going into the yard and seeing the rifles pointed at you from the National Guard that was surrounding it. But so there have been a lot of film clips about Attica and movies made. Cindy Firestone had one years ago. But Stanley Nelson has found footage that no one has had, disturbing footage on the takeover, but also his interviews of the survivors, men and families of the hostages, because it was a hostage situation. It is searing cinema. It is, I don't know how long it ran. I was oblivious of time. You're just so absorbed in it. But one of the things that old time BAI people might appreciate, what was devastating for me, is that one of the Attica brothers, known as Big Black, was a frequent guest over the years. He passed away about 8 or 9 years ago before he was one of the men who, with attorney Liz Fink, gained a settlement. And he often talked to us on BAI about the torture that was inflicted on him, how he was forced to lie naked, and they put a football under his chin. And if they told him if it fell off, he would get shot. And since they had just killed 39 people, that was not hyperbole. That was in the cards. Well, it was always horrible to hear this man who I got to know and like to tell that story. And then in the movie, footage never seen before of him lying there with blood coming down and the football, just as he described it. I couldn't bear it. It was tough. It was very tough to watch. It's not that it was that grisly. It was grisly, but that it was someone I knew. And to see it on film, it was tough to see. The other thing, and there was a discussion afterwards, the Stanley Nelson's partner in this, a woman named Tracy Curry, was asked in the Q&A afterwards if anything has changed in the town of Attica. And she's an African-American woman, extremely attractive and well-poised and well-spoken, all the things that you would expect of a film director. And she said that she went to Attica for a few days. They were doing some interviews with another woman, but they were the only two African-Americans in this town that they saw. And they were harassed terribly. She said it was like going into a time warp, that it was Attica. And the townspeople stopped and questioned and talked to in a tone that was threatening and condescending, which suggests that we might have some work to do in America. One of the things that was very revealing in the movie was an interview with a woman named Dee Quinn, that's her maiden name, whose father, William Quinn, was the prison guard who died during the takeover. In fact, as the inmates were taking over, William Quinn, who was one of the guards who inmates who were interviewed said had a good rapport, but he was, in all of the fury, he was thrown against when they actually were taking over. He had the keys and he was thrown up against the wall and he was taken to the hospital. And during the negotiations, which seemed to be going well, word came out that Bill Quinn had died. And what happened at Attica then is that the negotiations came to a halt because amnesty, that people would not be punished for participating in this uprising, amnesty was an issue that was negotiable. But when Officer Quinn died, it was off the table. The state said that it had to be held accountable. And being interviewed in the movie is his daughter, who was 5 at the time, has written a book called The Prison Guard's Daughter, which I've started reading. And the interesting thing about Journeys is that in the book and in the movie, she says that about 15 years ago, as she was trying to understand who her father was, who she had lost when she was 5, she came to New York and had a meeting in Harlem with Richard Clark, who was one of the inmate leaders and a Muslim brother. And they started a friendship, a correspondence, and an understanding of each other. It was almost like a Nelson Mandela truth and reconciliation. And that can happen is so hopeful. It makes you realize that we can reach out with the vast differences. It takes work and it takes courage. And I hope to have her call her after I finish reading the book and have her as a guest. And the interesting thing is that it's almost the other side of a bookshelf, that I had interviewed Josh Melville, whose father, Sam Melville, was one of the inmates killed in Attica. And I met Josh because I had been in the yard every September there are forums and discussions, and I'm often invited. And this was maybe 30 years ago, 35 years ago. And afterwards, there was a question open for question period. And this boy, I thought he was 12. He turned out to be about 17. Asked me, what do you think about a man who wanted to change the world and forgot his son in the process? And I asked, who are you? And he said, Josh Melville. And I said, oh, Sam was your dad. Sam was a political activist, anti-war, was arrested for bombs of banks. and killed in the takeover. So it, and then he called me. I was haunted by that question and the boy. And about 3 years ago, I got a call from a grown Josh Melville living in California, married, three children, who had written a book, and it's called American Time Bomb. And it was about his trying to understand who his dad was, just as Dee Quinn, the daughter of a prison guard. I find all of this important, and trying to pull people together to find out the differences are so vast, but so are the things that pull us together. I don't think I'm being naive. I'm hopeful. I recognize the challenges and the differences and in a place like Attica, the prison, the town, the racism, the divide between them and the city of New York. But damn it, if we don't work at trying to find paths of communication. I've always said people who are activists say it's the struggle, the struggle. The struggle is the richest part of our lives because we can see change and people's. And if the whole world has not redefined itself, we see individuals whose lives have meaning as the result of the work that was done. Those of us who participated in sit-ins, know what's going on today and see what the young people in Black Lives Matter are fighting for. But we also know that there were things that the separate, going into Alabama and Mississippi and seeing that there are elected officials who are African-American, that's progress. It's change. It doesn't undo all the evil that exists in the world, but you work at it, and the struggle is part of the exhilaration of life. I'm almost exhausted trying to make my point. By the way, American Time Bomb is one of the three books that we've been offering as a premium. Josh Melville's three. It's interesting. Three men that I interviewed have books that what they have in common is they were all interviewed by me. And that the New York Times has not reviewed them. And yet all three books are absolutely essential in understanding the American fabric of today. Josh Melville's American Time Bomb, Yosef Salaam, one of the Central Park lads, now called the Exonerated Five, his Better Not Bitter, a fascinating interview that I had with him on BAI, and his book, so important, his tale, his journey, which not only about the case itself and the miscarriage of the monumental miscarriage of justice, but the role that a man named Donald Trump had revealing his colors years before the rest of America discovered it. And the third book, In the Name of Emmett Till, Robert Mayer's book about how the children of Mississippi reacting to what happened to Emmett Till became leaders in the summer of 64 that created enormous change 9 years after the death of Emmett Till. So any of those three books, American Time Bomb, Better Not Bitter, or In the Name of Emmett Till, are available to BAI listeners, a $50 gift. If you want two of the three, $75. Have I got a deal for you? All you have to do is email me at drothenberg@fortunesociety.org. Give your phone number and I'll call you back. And now if Reggie's magic finger does the dancing, we'll hear a little Fat Waller. I'll do an essay and then I'll tell you again about how to get those theater tickets. But here's the wonderful Fat Waller with a little number that he wrote himself.
to mingle with the smart set and invite the Vanderbilts to tea. Everything on which you've got your heart says, baby, have a little dream on me. Paris in the spring, Miami in the fall, interviews and pictures in the press. What a way to speak on 20 bucks a week. Don't forget that Rockefeller started out on less. Everything we touch will turn to clover in the magic land of what's to be. But until your baby puts it over, baby, have a little dream on me.
Said that with Fats Waller, even the piano keys seem to be smiling. There's an exuberance, a glee about his performing. I'm David Rothenberg. We're on WBAI 99.5 FM and listener-sponsored radio. I'm underwhelmed by the response for tickets to see Mornings at 7. This is a play when it was done in 1981, won the Tony Award, Best Revival. It is a stunning piece of theater, and we're offering tickets for all next week for all the performance, $50 for two tickets, an all-star cast, Lindsay Krause, Judith Ivey, John Rubenstein. Remember him? He starred Arturo's son. He starred in Pippin on Broadway. Tony Roberts, who was in all the Woody Allen movies. Dan Luria and Patty McCormick. Just a wonderful cast and a beautiful play. We have tickets next week, $50 for two tickets. Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday matinees. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday night at 7, Saturday at 8. All you have to do is email me at drothenberg@fortunesociety.org. Give your phone number and I'll call you. It's not a very complicated process. It's how we exist and how you sustain us on the air and how we get you to something as, are you going back to the theater? Are you going out? Are you feeling free? Are you taking advantage of the new opportunities? I can't wait to see Mornings at 7 again because, you know, somebody said, what is the plot? And I said, I can't tell you. It's been 30 years since I saw it. I remember the feeling I had when I left the theater. And I said, you know that Maya Angelou quote? I don't remember what he said and I don't remember what he did, but I'll always remember how he made me feel. And there are experiences that you have in your life in which the specifics are not as important as the glow or the antithesis that you've gotten from a person, a play, a movie, a thing. And so I invite you to support us and at the same time to treat yourself to a wonderful theater experience. On Saturdays, I do an essay called Out on a Limb. And every now and then I do one and people say, oh, I want a copy. I want. So I figure it might be worth repeating. And since I'm on with Lenny's audience and maybe I'm new to you, I'm going to repeat the Out on a Limb that I did a couple of weeks ago. It's an essay. It's like an editorial or an op-ed piece. The obsessive divide in America is exhausting and threatening. It all starts with color, the color of people's skin. No matter the issue, we're split. Whether it's wearing a mask, receiving a vaccination, a woman's right to choose, ending the war in Afghanistan, classroom curriculum, election day fraud, infrastructure legislation, climate change, large crowds at sporting events, all with widely different perspectives and few looking for paths of agreement. We can't even get an agreement on determining cause and effect of a destructive and seditious invasion of our nation's capital on January 6th. Who and what are responsible for the resistance to problem solving? Who has an investment in continual turmoil, threats? Who's responsible? They wanted to kidnap the governor of Michigan or kill Mike Pence. But who do we blame? Trump? The internet? Or was it the last 300 years of American hypocrisy? A statement and perspective which, into itself, would create apoplexy with Fox News pundits. Have we been racing to this divide for decades, or is it a manifestation of one ambitious and ignorant man? Clearly, the pandemic has been charting the course for 2 years, but we need to go back to the roots of our divide to understand why every issue is contentious. Partially, it's because some of America is incapable of focusing on any aspect of climate change or wearing a mask or January 6th without race, people's skin color, blocking their perspective. Our nation's shameful history of slavery, segregation has been well diagnosed and dissected by historians and social scientists. That very aspect of American law is at the center of a furious battle this very year to include the truth about our history. And it's been assailed, called anti-American or teaching hatred of whites. Clearly, what is preached on Sundays does not survive the sun's rising on Mondays. And the painful process of recognition and forgiveness, forgiving oneself and one's forefathers and foremothers, is at this time too daunting to consider. The truth is, our history is and has been establishing first and second class tiers for a citizenry with race the criterion. The dividing line it's infected our major institutions, education, healthcare, housing, employment, and religion, establishing parallel but unequal cultures, with government traditionally assuring the black population that their schools, homes, and healthcare and the job opportunities will be inferior. Our nation's early years, education was carefully guarded. It was unlawful in some states for a Negro to be educated. Knowledge is power, and free labor was needed for profits in the land of cotton. Doo-dah, doo-dah. Ironically, a nation which has boasted of its Christian heritage had segregated churches, which legitimized slavery and segregation, contradicting the very concept of Christ's teachings. It could be argued that the black church proved to be the salvation of an ostracized population, where a sense of community evolved and black voices sang out in an emotional release. In spite of inferior or no education, housing that often proved unsafe or unhealthy with limited access to health care and job opportunities with very low glass ceilings, black people in great numbers clung to the American dream. Fascinating, evident in the people who became the firsts, the legends: Marian Anderson, Ralph Bunche, Thurgood Marshall, Barbara Jordan, Jackie Robinson, Sidney Poitier, Martin Luther King, Oprah Winfrey, Barack Obama. Game changers all. They opened doors. Number 42, Jackie, he entered Major League Baseball in 1947, and winning, he let them know, meant profits. Jackie was followed by Larry Doby and Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Bob Gibson, Derek Jeter, sports heroes. And in other games, Michael Jordan, Jim Brown, Arthur Ashe, the Williams sisters, Tiger. Their posters hanging in the rooms of white suburban households across America. The black talent sang and danced on television into our homes. Ella Fitzgerald, Nat Cole, Beyonce. And on the big screen, Denzel and Halle Berry. And Lena Horne and Harry Belafonte on the screen and in the love dreams of many Americans. As change was taking place, a resistance was cementing. Affirmative action for them, but not for me. Unfulfilled white Americans were whispering. Then a political catalyst. The USA has always had affirmative action, starting with the two Adams presidencies, through a couple of Roosevelts, two George Bushes, and that's just government. How about business? Getting into choice colleges has always been open to certain families, and many a store or business has and sons as part of its title. The Rockefellers, the Fords, the Luces, the Vanderbilts, the Astors, to name a few of the richest, have always been plural dynasties. Look at the incompetent Trumps running around the White House for 4 years, all of them. The resistance to all variations of affirmative action, or more frightening, success by sheer talent or dint, all that slowly became a political tool, protection from the other. Your inability to achieve is as a result of the other's emergence. That spirit was nurtured in spite of Barack Obama's being elected president twice, or perhaps because of it. Trump's birthing lies about Obama were blunt, but planted new seeds. Election acrobatics taking place in Georgia, Arizona, Wisconsin, Florida, and Texas, well, across America, is based on irrational white fear of black leadership. And it's almost theater of the absurd because Barack Obama, a former community organizer, was much more and is much more relevant to the lives of the unfulfilled white men that we saw on January 6th than Donald Trump, whose singular pursuit of self-promotion has always been oblivious of the struggle of the very men who climbed the walls of the Capitol building in behalf of his lost election, which he lost by 7 million votes. Make America Great Again was a charade. Great again? A knowing nod to white privilege echoed by a man whose economic and political pursuits has always been self-centered. Trump is out of the White House, but the stench lingers. How does America recuperate from a history of lies and a fascist who ruled for 4 years? Those are the challenges we leave the next generations burdened with: a pandemic, climate change, which causes floods and fires, and political denials. Is the next group of Americans ready to confront what those before them have only hinted at? Martin Luther King made us look and care. His efforts made the Obama presidency possible. But can the current teens and 20-somethings get off their smartphones long enough to see their nation painfully denied it in need of a community of healers to make America great for the first time? I won't be around to see how it plays out, but I only hope that America discovers that its strength will be fulfilled when everyone can sit at the table. I'm David Rothenberg, out on a limb, and that's my essay for today. Here's, I don't know if we have enough time for more music, except we'll go out with some Tony and Frank. I just want to add on to a couple of things. I'm reading in the paper about John Gruden. I always thought that he was a horse's petunia. You know, my mother used to say, why are there more horses' asses when there are horses? And I never was impressed by John Gruden when he was a host on ESPN. There's some sort of obtrusive male bravura that didn't ring true to me. And then not surprised to learn that he's accused of emails and comments that are racist, homophobic, and misogynistic. He's got all three. He covered the waterfront with it, with his emails. And the first one was a comment about the players, an African-American man who was the head of the NFL Players Union, commenting on his physical being, his facial components. And he said he apologized. He didn't mean to hurt. The fact that he thought of it, not just wrote about it or said it, that it came into his mind that that's the way he thinks. And then after his predictable and obviously well-counseled apology, all, by the way, it was DeMaurice Smith who he commented about, the NFL players rep. Then all these comments, homophobic and misogynistic. Obviously, it was not a one-time thing. He's a he's the kind of man that climbed the wall on January 6th. That's what it's. And the incredible thing is that that whole political social body seems to feel that they have been bypassed, and they hook their dreams to a man like Donald Trump, who was the most impervious to their needs of any political figure in my lifetime. He's not even a political figure. He's a real estate developer and a hustler. So there's so much work to be done. Reggie, I'm exhausted. I just want to let people know once again that we have tickets. You want to support WBAI and some of the extraordinary programs. Do you ever hear Lawn and Disorder on Mondays at 9? Do you ever hear Tom Robbins, one of the best investigative journalists? He's on at 5 o'clock on Mondays. Felipe Luciano, who was a young lord, on Saturday afternoons. There are extremely important programs and voices on this station that warrant your support, as well as Lenny Lope, one of the great interviewers in modern radio, every day at this time at 1, and I have the presumption to fill in for him for an hour. So I urge you to consider supporting us. I'm inviting you to see a revival of one of the treasured theater play, one of the plays that I treasure having seen, Mornings at 7 by Paul Osborne. Google it, you know, read about the television movie cast, the previous cast, all the awards that it won. And with this all-star cast, Tony Roberts, John Rubenstein, Lindsay Krause, Judith Ivey, Patty McCormick. And we're offering you tickets all next week, 3 matinees, Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday, and 3-4 evenings, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. $50 for 2 tickets, an extraordinary offer. All you have to do is email me at drothenberg@fortunesociety.org. Give your phone number, and I'll call you back, and we'll get you to the theater. So, Reggie, I guess at this time we're fading out. I've suggested a fadeaway with two guys who know how to sing, two of my Italian-American brothers. One is named Frank Sinatra, the other Tony Bennett, and they have a song that celebrates the biggest romance I've had in my life. It's with the city of New York. I've never failed to, you know, I grew up in a small town in New Jersey, and the legend has it when I was 4, my parents brought me in. I looked around and I said, thank God there's something else. And I've never not been in love with this town. It angers me. It upsets me. I protest. I march. I love this city. So Tony and Frank, sing to everybody and tell them in song what I feel emotionally about New York, New York.
Spreading the news, you're leaving today. Tell him, Frank.
I want to be a part of it. New York, New York.
Your vagabond shoes, they are longing to stray.
from WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Today is Wednesday, October 13th. Here are some headlines. Black Americans are not a majority of the general population in any state, but they make up more than half of the prison population in a dozen of them. That's according to a new study from the Sentencing Project released today. In several more states, the group found the disparity between black and white prison populations is larger than 9-1. New Jersey tops the nation in terms of disparity in its incarceration rates, with a black-white ratio of more than 12-1. The report made several recommendations to address racial and ethnic disparities in prisons, including the elimination of mandatory minimum sentences and discontinuing arrests for low-level drug offenses. Researchers also encouraged lawmakers writing crime bills to include an estimate of the policy's impact on all demographic groups. Millions of retirees and other Americans receiving Social Security benefits in 2022 are set to receive the biggest payment increase in four decades. The Social Security Administration said today that next year's cost of living adjustment, or COLA, will be 5.9%. The adjustment is tied to the Labor Department's Consumer Price Index, which rose 5.9% in September from a year earlier. Over the last 10 years, the Social Security COLA has averaged about 1.7% annually as inflation remained low. But the economic recovery from the coronavirus pandemic has triggered rising prices for a wide range of goods and services. The increased payments will begin for more than 64 million Social Security beneficiaries in January 2022. Older Americans, people with disabilities, and children and spouses of recipients who are deceased are eligible for the benefits. For the first time in 20 months, non-essential travelers from Canada and Mexico will be permitted to enter the U.S. at its land border crossings for purposes such as shopping or visiting family and friends, so long as they are fully vaccinated. As of right now, people traveling into the U.S. for essential reasons do not have to be vaccinated, but that is changing as well. Around the start of the new year, essential travelers, such as truck drivers crossing U.S. land borders, will also be required to be fully vaccinated. The new rules are similar to planned requirements announced last month for international air travelers. And more than half of the world's 236 million COVID patients can expect to suffer from long-haul type symptoms, according to researchers at Penn State College of Medicine. A study by the authors, published in the Journal of the American Medical Association on Wednesday, relied on dozens of reports published worldwide on vaccinated COVID-19 patients who recovered from the illness. The researchers looked at each patient's condition at three separate points: 1 month after recovery, 2 to 5 months later, and 6 months or later. They found that more than half of the patients still had symptoms up to 6 months after recovery, including neurological issues, lung abnormalities, and cardiovascular issues like heart palpitations and chest pain. It remains unclear how or why COVID-19 symptoms can linger in those who have recovered, but the researchers say their findings show a crucial need for healthcare systems to prepare for an influx of long haulers. And in weather in Washington, D.C., it is 73 degrees and cloudy. In New York City, 68 degrees and cloudy. From WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin.
Attention, please, for an important secret message in Annie's Mystery Radio Code. Get your pencils ready. Now, here's the message itself.
Well, you know that local station board meeting that I've been telling you about that takes place this Wednesday, October 13th at 7 p.m.? Well, I've been pointing people to the KPFTX website where you can find the access information for the meeting, which will be held via Zoom. However, I've also been reliably informed that most WBAI listeners do not have a computer. So now I'm going to tell you how you can dial into the meeting yourself. By the way, the meeting is accessible to the public and includes an opportunity for public comment. So here's what you got to do. You can access the meeting by calling 929-205-6099. You got that? Write it down, kids. 929-205-6099. And then you enter this meeting ID, 922.457.2995. Got that? 922.457.2995. And since that wasn't